Hello and welcome back to Echoes of Glory, Season 8, Episode 1. I'm Jack.
And I'm Stato.
And hopefully you've enjoyed the new intro music at the start, which has been a massive talking point in our WhatsApp group over the summer. You're a fan?
I am a fan. I wasn't a fan of the old version, so I have to say happy times for me. When I first started listening to the pod, it was McNamara's band, which was a favourite of mine, but I understand a lot of the modern generation just don't get the link to that song. Yeah. But
this is when I just edit it and put the old clip in and make you sound really stupid. Right, first question then of the first episode is, what is the biggest lie that you've ever heard? Now, this has come about from obviously all the news about the stadium and fans being lied to and all that. So I want to know, what is the best lie you've ever heard, football or non-football?
I told it. It's my lie. I take ownership of this. If you're listening, Jen, I'm sorry, but I fibbed to you. Only once, just once. 2015, beginning of the season, we played Everton. We were away on holiday in Norfolk, and there was nowhere I was going to get to go to the game. Then Sky moved it to a 5:15 kickoff, and then a very close friend of mine, who subsequently passed away, but she was quite ill at the time, she announced she was having a birthday party. And my wife said, "You should go." And I was like, "Well, I should, but you know, we're on holiday." So I went, but I kind of left an hour and a half earlier than I needed to leave the holiday so I could go to Spurs Everton. Now, in many ways, the day conspired against me because it was a 0-0. It was absolute monsoon conditions. Yeah. And it was a Minions fancy dress party. And I went to the game and then straight on to the party. So now, I mean, I didn't like dress up in full regalia or anything, and I was quite well covered under my coat and stuff.
Amazing.
And no one could really tell. And then I contrived to go to the wrong pub as well. So it was in the County Arms pub in Himes Park. And I wrongly went to the County Hotel, which is the other end of the same road.
Oh, really?
And walked into an Indian wedding.
dressed as a minion.
Dressed as a minion, essentially. So it was high comedy. And then I went back the next morning, and there was a rail replacement service. It was an absolute nightmare. 3-hour journey. I was absolutely hanging. I was really struggling.
All for a 0-0.
And all for a 0-0.
And an Indian wedding.
And a Minion's birthday party. But so I told the fib.
That's fantastic. And did that ever get out?
I think I let something slip about a week later, but as it was about football, I don't think Jen remotely was listening.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I'm sorry, darling, I love you.
That's brilliant. I put this out on social media, so I had some good responses. So Carl Woodbridge was the first to reply, and he said, "The new stadium that's going to be ready on time." So, classic there. Hannick as well, he said, "The greatest ever non-signing, Leandro Damião."
Yes.
Which we were linked with him for about two seasons, weren't we? And it never happened.
It always makes me wonder, though, how much is just the press speculation? Is the lie from them, not from the club?
Yeah.
You know.
Or the agent just feeding stuff, get him a new deal, get a decent sign-on fee. Then we had a couple of interesting non-football-related ones which came in. So the quizmaster himself, Simon Mitchell, said that he was told that Moldova was an easy place to get to.
Yeah.
But it took him 2 days, one flight, two trains and a bus later, and he eventually made it. So that's a pretty effective lie from I'm assuming that's his travel agent that's lied to him there.
Cup Winners' Cup. '90s.
Mark Walsh said the biggest lie that he was ever told was it was a form of punishment for when he was younger, which was that naps were a form of punishment. Which, interesting. And Gareth Pugh, who on our WhatsApp group, said, and it is possibly the greatest lie ever told, Bill Clinton.
Yeah, yeah.
"I did not have sexual relations with that woman," which is possibly the...
What did she say? She didn't inhale, was it?
So there you go, biggest lies that you've ever heard. On to more serious matters, the stadium. So the club released a statement last week after there were leaks on Sky Sports and TalkSport that the fact that we'd made a payment to the FA about going back to Wembley. What are your thoughts on it?
Obviously the natural feeling is disappointment. Everyone wanted to be in. The club, the way they communicate with us makes it hard sometimes to believe them when something genuine happens, if that is the case. There's a feeling of suspicion around everyone. And, you know, so many people who speculate on this have no knowledge of how the building trade works. They have no knowledge of how quickly a fit-out could be realistically done. Also, none of us really know how the stadium was never going to be completely finished for the 15th of September, but it might well have been doable, you know, on the day. Yeah. It had taken a period of time to complete certain parts of it, and but we'll never know that. It's also quite plausible that this final testing, or this first test of this software or this circuitry, finally, you know, was done for the first time last week, and they find the error. It could be riddled with errors. It could be one error. You know, the people from the trust have said there's one problem on one circuit out of 10,000, but they can't pinpoint which one. I don't know. There's also the issue of the club seemingly went over the top to apologise to the NFL. It's hugely embarrassing. Yeah. But didn't say sorry in the same statement to the fans. An oversight by someone, but someone's paid a lot of money to write these press releases. Yeah. So, you know, it's... there are a lot of people who are saying that they didn't sign up for a second season at Wembley. I understand that, but you're a Tottenham supporter. You support Tottenham week in, week out. You support Tottenham, even, you know, we used to support Tottenham every Saturday at 3 o'clock, but now it's Sunday at 1 o'clock, Sunday 4 o'clock, Monday 8 o'clock. You know, we support them away over land and sea across Europe. What, you know, what difference does it make? I understand the frustrations. People have paid a lot of money for these improved facilities. And it's going to be the best ground in the world until someone builds a better one. And we try to shoehorn it into a year and 4 months, and that maybe has just come up not quite long enough. But
I think the biggest frustration for me is I don't mind waiting for the stadium. That's not the issue. It's just the way that it's been communicated to the fans is just so frustrating. And I think the biggest problem for me is they're quick to take your money on the additional costs. And like, my season tickets, I'm in one of the cheaper seats, and my ticket's gone up 250 quid. It's like £1,000 now for a season, which is a lot of money to anyone. And they're quick for that to happen, but then obviously when it's stuff that actually the fans need to know, then it's just poor. It could have been handled a lot better.
I agree. The trouble is, it's been inflamed by the press because everyone wants it to fail, it seems, in the press. Yeah. I'm not saying that, you know, we're not, you know, Real Madrid, we haven't got marker, our paper, to put forward our case. It's just, you know, a lot of people were speculating, and then a lot of the people, you know, got lucky because it's proved to have not come in on time. And the trouble is now the speculation of how long it's going to be. Well, they've been honest and said these games in October are in doubt. The problem is with Man City that Wembley's not available and they're not prepared. Yeah, they'll probably have the league won by Christmas, let alone by, you know, worrying about three away games on the trot in April. But, you know, we've been very lucky that the Premier League have allowed this. There was no talk of them allowing it in years, you know, previously. Maybe it's got to the critical point where it's like, we can't play there. So we've got to do something.
Yeah, I think they'll find a solution to that Man City game. So they have to.
Presumably, it'll get postponed. But the trouble is that the thing that I find galling as a fan, and I might be the same if it was any other club, is games get moved quick enough for Sky or BT. You know.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll find a way around it. It's just, you know what? I think that the press and the media have made it a much bigger issue than it is. It's still an issue, and I just don't like the way the fans have been treated. But in the grand scheme of things, it's, in my opinion, it's not an absolute massive deal.
If the club had said at the start it's going to be 2 years at Wembley, then we'd have all been able to deal with it. We might have wanted a season ticket break, you know, so we didn't have to go. I don't know how everyone would have dealt with it. I personally would have liked it to have been ready for the start of the season, four test events, you know, and to have gone a whole lot more smoothly.
Yeah.
That was never viable, so maybe that's why it should have been over 2 years. But if it's only going to take a year and a half, why are you paying for somewhere else?
Yeah, but like you said, it is going to be the best stadium in the world, so eventually when we do get there, it is going to be...
And how good is it going to be that whatever stand you're in, as long as you're not an away supporter, you can meet up at any bar in the ground, in the general admission areas, before the game. So you sit in the north upper, and I'm, or someone sits in the south lower, and I'm in the west stand. We can all meet for a pint in the ground, £7 a pint, whatever it's going to be, you know. But we can do that.
And a wheel of cheese.
Yeah,
it would definitely be worth the wait. We've got a couple of games that we want to cover off as well. opening day of the season, which was our 2-1 win at Newcastle, Jan Vertonghen finally scoring a Premier League goal, which is, I think, is his first goal in 5 years or something like that in the Premier League.
We got talking about this either on the WhatsApp group or a podcast I was on at the end of the season, and of course, because he'd had goals wrongly disallowed. He had a deflected goal taken away from him that really was going in and was his. Then he had the onside goal.
That was both where in the same in his, game.
Exactly,
as well,
wasn't it? He was in his own half.
Yeah.
And, you know, crazily, the referee or the assistant flagged for it, and it was just like 8 yards onside. But
it was a good header, his goal as well. He took it well.
It was.
I was really interesting to see Davinson Sanchez for the first time going up for a set piece, because he's actually had a really strong goal scoring record at Ajax. Yeah. I think he scored 8 or 9 league goals in 30 odd games, which for a centre half is pretty ridiculous. And he's a big, powerful guy. So to see him go forward and get the flick on as well was really good. And potentially that's something that they've looked at. Yeah. I think actually he's one of our best players
We've
in the
We've also probably seen the corners at the World Cup have been such an important thing that, you know, our delivery. We had that period where we would just look for the man on the near post.
Yeah.
And the percentage of the window of getting that right was so small, but Toby seemed to be great with a glancing header.
Dyer got a few as well, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Early on in the season, Gilzean-esque, and you know, obviously we've sadly lost Alan Gilzean, as those who were there on Saturday will know, for the minutes of applause, which was wonderfully and respectfully, shown. But he was a true great of our club, and again, the younger generation might not know that, but a player. Who I could only, my dad and my uncle who saw Gilzean week in, week out, would have said that Berbatov was a pretender to Gilzean's throne. And you think how much we salivated over a player of Berbatov's skill and laconic brilliance.
But just going back to that Newcastle game, like that Vertonghen goal goes in after about 7 or 8 minutes, and you're thinking, brilliant, here we go, fantastic, and then they pretty much go straight out the other end and get the equaliser, and then we've pretty much did the same thing to them. We, a few minutes later, got up the other end, and Dele Alli scores 2 seasons in a row now. He scored on the opening day at St James's Park and took his goal really well.
He started well, I think.
Really well.
People say he had a poor World Cup, he let us down, rubbish. You know, we didn't play in midfield that well in the World Cup, England. Dele was part of that. He takes a collective responsibility. Yeah. But I think he started off really brightly for us.
I want to talk more about Alli in the World Cup actually a minute when we go over the Fulham game. But the rest of that Newcastle game was just a fight and a battle, and really, like, you know what, we're not playing that well, we'll just hang on.
That's
and grind
great
it
three
out.
Points, because the opportunities they had, the number of times they hit the woodwork, I'm not going to say we got out of jail there, but you know, we did.
Yeah.
To come away with 3 points when, I mean, everyone was, the support, a lot of the support has been very toxic. I've found it's kind of helped me have a clear out on Twitter, because there's so much negativity from some people, and I don't want to slate people off, but I like to think of the Echoes of Glory people, both the podcasters and the listeners, as quite sensible people. Yeah. We're not reactionary.
We've got Abbas as well.
We have. We do have a fraction of extremism, let's say. But, you know, let's talk briefly about the transfers. We didn't bring anyone in. Maybe that's the way forward. Maybe we've got a squad that is good enough. We've got a team that doesn't need to be, and a team ethic that doesn't need to be broken by a wrong'un coming in that you might or might not sign. I mean, who would you have wanted to come in?
You know, it was a difficult window, and I was on one side of it for part of the window that, you know, we don't need anyone. But then I was like, oh, I don't know, but we're so close.
Yeah, yeah.
And if we don't bring anyone in, are we going to be able to get over the line? So I was between the two headspaces throughout the whole window, like, do we need someone, don't we need someone? I'm pleased that we didn't go and blow 35 million on an average player.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like we did with Sissoko, who actually, by the way, against Newcastle, had a pretty good game. That was what I actually thought was one of the best games he's had for us. But I'm pleased we didn't go and buy for the sake of buying. I think Grealish, who was the only real one we were properly linked with, would have been a good investment for the squad and for the future.
I agree.
Would have been for that. I don't think he would have done much this season for us. He might have played in the Carling Cup.
He could have, and he's obviously older and got more footballing experience at a higher level, but he could have been a Dele Alli for us. He'd come in with no expectations and actually
a bit of an unknown quantity in certain games.
I'd love to see him playing week in, week out with better players, which obviously he would have. But, you know, when at the start of the window, Villa were in crisis, almost in administration. It's plausible that the potential sale of their club hung on whether Grealish remained at the club or not. And then the new owner puts his foot down and says, no, he's not for sale. So Bruce saying on TalkSport the other week, you know, I suppose they'd done their business sooner, they'd have got him. Says who? Yeah. You know, I don't...
There's
you
a
weren't
lot
making
of factors,
the decisions.
Isn't there, in a transfer.
You have only got your job by the skin of your teeth. I think we would have been in for Sessegnon. If Fulham hadn't got promoted, I think we might have got Sessegnon. But straight away, Fulham have probably said, because I don't know, the press don't know, how do we know this has not been done in private?
Yeah.
Levy phones their chairman and he says, absolutely not for sale. Right, no deal. I looked at players like Barkley and Drinkwater. I didn't think Barkley would necessarily play under Sarri. I thought Jorginho would be his man and the other players they've got. Chelsea probably won't sell to us. They probably won't sell to us because we're actually performing more consistently than them in the last couple of years. They probably will refuse point blank to sell to us. And I can understand
that. The
same
way we would to them now as well.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
So there's no guarantee that the players... And actually, we said we had a price for Alderweireld. Nobody met that price. So Alderweireld stayed. He played. If Poch can get this, you know, get this done before the end of the window happens, and he doesn't go, because we can still lose players until the end of August, because the other countries in the world, their window's not shut. Who knows?
But I also think as well, we've had a lot of people talk about Lucas Moura, who started the season really well. He was brought in January, didn't play that much football, started both games. So I don't like the phrase, oh, it's like a new sign. I don't like that. But he hasn't really had a run yet.
He's come with the freshness of pre-season as well. He's had his full pre-season.
So we've got him. Winks missed pretty much all of he missed the second half of the season with an injury. He's back now as well. Josh Onam has come back into the squad altogether, who wasn't part of it because he was out on loan. So people say about, oh, you need a few faces to freshen it up. There's a few there that haven't been involved. And you've got players from the youth team that will have done a whole pre-season with the first team. They're all new faces.
They're pushing players. We've got the likes. Dembele isn't going to be a starter, I don't think, all of this season. Yeah. So that changes his. Rather than us hoping he'll play and hoping he'll play well, it's now a case of he's got to play well to get in the team.
Yeah.
You know? And also, you look at the striking issue. How do you buy a striker to compete with Harry Kane? Because whoever you buy knows they're never going to be first choice. And we are not going to play two up top. The very least, we might play someone as a second striker. And I'd rather that be Dele Alli in games in certain situations.
And we have those players that can adapt and play in that role. We've got Alli, Eriksen can play there, Moura, Son's played up front on his own before. So there's players that can play that supporting
role. And it's going to be a 4-3-3 type formation where these attacking players are doing, not a 4-4-2. You know, West Ham fans have been going on about how we've got to play Hernandez. They don't play two up top, and he's too small to play up top on his own. We've got Kane who can do that.
Yeah.
And then you look at the money. Now, I'm not saying Levy's being tight or the money's going on the squad. I know that some of the prices of exactly what West Ham have paid and exactly who they've paid it to. Perez, they got from Arsenal, he's on £93,000 a week. He's a bench warmer at West Ham. He does not get near our team. He does not get... It might not get in our matchday squad. You know, these are silly money. The money agents want. Fabianski went to West Ham for £7 million. The agent got £5 million. So that cost West Ham 12 plus wages. Because if they didn't pay it, the agent would have taken Fabianski somewhere else.
Yeah. But I think overall it was a good window for us.
We didn't lose people, that's the key.
And we've strengthened in terms of we've got players back fit, we've got our loan players back from last season, so we have got a stronger squad going into this season than we did last season.
And I think we're more competitive. And I'd like to believe that Poch wants to do this organically. And I'm not going to say, Klopp said it, if I had the money I wouldn't spend it. If I had it, then he's got it, and now he's spiked it. And I'm not criticising the players he's bought, but honestly, who of the players he bought get in our first team? Keita, yes. Naby Keita, yes. But does Fabinho? I don't know. They haven't played him yet.
Yeah.
So would he? Would their keeper get in ahead of Hugo Lloris, who's won the World Cup?
Yeah. It's a fair point.
Would Shaqiri get in our team? No, he wouldn't. Wouldn't even suit Arteta.
I was surprised when Liverpool went for him at all, even for 12 million, when people are like, oh, it's worth the gamble.
But it's a guy who plays one or two good games every six for Stoke as their starting player. Yeah. What's he going to be like as a fringe player at Liverpool coming off the bench? Yeah. And then the players Arsenal have bought. You know, they needed to fill those spaces. They needed to strengthen their squad. And I'm sure in time, Gwendolyn, whatever he's called, and Torreira, you know, they're going to be great players. But are they going to be like other young Arsenal players have been, where they make the mistakes in the big games, they learn the lessons, and then they end up joining the top clubs for top money? But in the meantime, do all their practice.
Or they do the thing where they just stagnate and stay as that player that had potential. But
we didn't need our squad or team, the surgery that Liverpool lost the Champions League because their midfield wasn't strong enough. They bought three new midfielders. That will improve them. That will give them a better pot to pick from. But we don't need that level of improvement.
Yeah, no, I agree. We've got as good a squad, excluding City, because their squad is ridiculous. Yeah. But you take them out of the equation, you'd probably say we've
got
the best
squad. But that's
the
point. You say we take them out of the equation. How much would we have to spend to get to their level, to compete, to win the league? Because that is the only next level we have. Yeah, yeah. Okay, going further in the Champions League is probably the more achievable next level. There's still a lot of that. It's down to the luck of the draw. When you get to the... You want to try and win your group. You want to try and get a weaker team. But, you know, there are decent teams who finish runners-up in the group who then end up going through.
Yeah, that's it. You know, that's it. And to us in the Champions League, anybody that qualifies out of the group stage is going to be a good side, because you've six games there.
And we're in pot two for the Champions League. Whatever happens now, we're definitely in pot two. That's great. But we can still get Real Madrid. We can still get Barcelona. We can still get Bayern Munich. You know, we could be lucky and we could get the Russian team, Lokomotiv Moscow. But we got that group the other year and we got CSKA. Yeah. They're the top seed because they've won one of the seven top, you know, leagues in Europe. Yeah.
For me as well, the Champions League is about playing those top sides.
Like, I agree.
I'd want Barcelona in my group.
Like, played them and I want to play them. If we got Real Madrid again, I'd be tinged with disappointment but then I want to see if we can beat them, Real Madrid again.
Or like Bayern Munich, which I mean, real big sides. Like, that's
I want to beat Bayern Munich on, you know, in one of the two games. I don't want to lose 10-2 on aggregate, you know? I want better than that.
We play Fulham at the weekend as well. Beat them 3-1. Lucas, Trippier and Kane in August.
Yes.
Mitrovic scoring for Fulham. I thought the first 35 minutes we were sensational. Yeah. They did not get a kick, Fulham. They didn't get out their half. They created one opportunity where they clipped the ball in behind and Sessegnon probably should have scored, but it was really great bit of goalkeeping. But we were all over them. It was fantastic to watch. And he brought Toby back into the side. We switched to a 3-5-2 with Lucas playing as that second striker. And Dele Alli playing in a more central, slightly deeper role. Basically what Ericsson was doing.
Affecting the game, though.
And he was fantastic, Ali. Absolutely fantastic. And it was the same role that he played for much of the World Cup with England in that tight midfield three.
But with Ericsson alongside him, not Sterling.
Yeah, exactly. And he was sensational, Dele Alli. Yeah. And I know watching it on the telly, some people might be like, oh, he's not getting the ball, something like this. He does so much stuff off the ball. And the ground he covers defensively.
I mean, as it was, the ball he was playing to Kane, where we won the free kick for Trippier's goal. Dele made that. Yeah. You know, Dele's the danger. The guy goes in and crunches him. Oh, he's tackled. You know? But he can see, he can always see, and he's always alert. And I love him. We've kept him again. I'm not saying he would have gone after, you know, an ordinary World Cup, in a World Cup where England were fantastic on the whole. But another year of our young English players. It's so exciting.
Yeah. I thought one of the most exciting players on the pitch was Lucas Moura.
Yeah.
And he was causing so many problems.
He's quick, he looks strong.
Yeah, he was fantastic. I mean, the goal was a thing of beauty.
Just like brilliant.
The way he hit it as well, weak foot, just curls it in the top corner, it's fantastic. He created that other chance where he nicked the ball off the defender.
Yes.
And, I mean, he definitely should have scored. But, you know,
he ended up with a heavy touch, overstretching, and he fouls the keeper, and that's why Kane, you know, there's a lot of the Spurs fans you could see on the TV pictures were like, well, why is that not? And, he'd overstretched and he probably did foul.
But I like that side of Lucas. He's one of the most unique players in the squad with that, in terms of his intense pressing and the speed in which he's like Mane at Liverpool. It's a very similar type of player to watch, and he was brilliant. He was just a nightmare for them the whole game. And at half time at 1-0, I'm sat there thinking this is going to be 4-5-0, we're going to bury them. But fair play to Fulham, the first 15 minutes of the second half, they came out, they changed some things, yeah, and they were fantastic. They got the equaliser, which Sessegnon did really well.
Tottenham is that? A fella sitting down, scoring a header. Every club thinks these things only happen to them, you know, and we think...
Yeah, I think the match of the day commentator described it as brilliant improvisation from Mitch of it.
But a header from a seated position into the top
on
of
the line as well.
And that's the key thing, he put it where the keeper wasn't. Yeah. Don't head it down where the keeper can save it. Head it away, you know, and it's brilliant.
And then we seemed to regroup a little bit after the goal and tried to get a little bit more control back.
Yeah.
Dembele came on in a different
changed
role.
Sanchez off, changed the formation.
Yeah.
That's good from Pochettino. I'm happy with that. He looks slender as well. He's looking good.
Looking really good.
He's summered well.
But I just think what was really interesting about the subs, or because Lamella came on as well and had a massive impact. Yeah. But just talking about both of them for now. Pochettino normally doesn't make many personnel changes in a game. He's always been reluctant to, he'll change tactics, formations, he'll change loads of stuff, and then he'll change the player. But the impact that the players off the bench have had so far this season have been the best since he's been in charge. And that gives us a whole nother dimension. And like you say, going from a 3-5-2 to then a 4-3-3, as an opposition player manager, you're then trying to figure out what the hell we're doing. And then in that time, we scored two goals and the game's pretty much over. But I think with Dembele, it was interesting to see him come on and almost play the Dier role and sit in front of the back four.
The base of the diamond.
Yeah, which I thought was really interesting because we've never really seen him used in that position before. So maybe that's something that we're going to see a bit more of this season.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but the Trippier free kick.
This boy was on fire.
Fantastic.
I mean, that is some... why have we not seen him doing that? Eriksen takes some okay free kicks, but I mean, this is... We're talking about the Burnley Beckham, aren't we? We really are, is it?
And the thing is, it wasn't like edge of the box, if you get it up
such
and over.
Such a long way out.
And it was central as well. Yeah. Like, and the way he hit it was such a strange way of striking
great
it from that distance.
And let's utilise it before someone works out what he's doing.
Yeah.
But that's a good thing. If teams are knowing we can't afford to give a free kick around the box, then we're going to create other opportunities because of that.
Yeah.
And we should have had a penalty. I mean, blimey. That was knee on knee. That definite.
Strange.
But one
decision.
Of those that clearly looked more of a penalty from behind the goal than it would have done for the
Kane's goal as well was a beautifully taken. Yeah. I mean, Lamella picking the ball up and just driving
running
at the heart of the pitch.
Because my criticism of him has always been overcomplicating things, keeping the ball, and therefore slowing down our direct attacks. So that was dynamic.
He was fantastic. And he looks as sharp as I've seen him, Lamella, as well. Like
he's had a
good
pre-season. That always helps.
And Kane took the goal lovely. Selling Chambers, who went flying, didn't he, and then just curling it in the bottom corner. It was lovely, lovely
it's
finish.
It's like taking, you know, candy off a baby with a Woolwich reject.
Well, it was absolutely fantastic. And 3-1, two wins out of two. Fantastic start to the season. Fantastic start. Oh, here he is. Hey, Steers arrived.
Bill Nicholson of the podcast. Mr. Echoes of Glory.
You lost what? You look great.
I've lost 5 stone.
Since
the end of the last season.
Oh, brilliant. So,
double quick time.
You've made it in perfect time for the fill in the blanks quiz.
Oh.
Which I can't let you see my computer screen. The game is... I'm giving you a match, a date.
Go on.
Put the book away. And I'm going to give you... six of the players that started in that start 11. You need to try and name the other five.
All right.
So the game is...
not that pen. Just got mental.
Yeah, I'm expecting to be... Can I go first?
Of course.
And then you,
of course.
Yeah. Well, you can try and do it together, everyone. But the game is May 2012.
Right.
And it's Tottenham 2, Fulham 0 in the Premier League. Okay? May
2012. So that's
Tottenham 2, Fulham 0. Okay.
Give me a kit. Give me the kit.
So I will give you some of the players from the side if you want.
Yeah.
So what I need you to name from this are the goalkeeper, a centre-back, a centre-midfielder, and then the two attacking players. BBC had us down as a 4-4-2-ish formation. Okay. So other players in this side. So right-back was Kyle Walker.
Yeah.
Left-back was Gareth Bale.
Yep.
Okay.
One of the centre halves was William Gallas.
Right.
You need to name the other centre back in that. The left side of midfield ish was Luka Modric. Right side was Aaron Lennon. One of the central midfielders was Sandro. So then you need to name the other centre midfielder and then two of the forwards. So 2012. So you need the goalkeeper,
Nelson.
Centre half. Not Nelson. That's a good guess though.
I'd take Cabal.
It's correct.
Strong.
Yunis Cabal is the other centre half.
So centre midfield.
Gomez.
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 Cudicini.
Cudicini. No.
What? Well, Pletico's didn't play a game, did he?
No,
there's quite an obvious keeper.
Friedel.
Brad Friedel. Brad Friedel's the goalkeeper.
Crunchar.
No.
Holtby?
He would have been more over that side, I would have thought.
So it's a central midfielder, and one of the forwards is an out-and-out striker. Nope. And the other one is a bit more of a creative-ish
Defoe player. He's one of the strikers.
Defoe was on the bench in this game, so Defoe's not one.
Is this a Van der Vaart season, or is that?
Van der Vaart.
So he's the
one.
So
it must be Crouch. It must be the other
not
one.
Not Crouch.
No. Oh, Palacios?
Not Palacios.
Oh. So up front we got...
Oh, is there other strikers? Pav.
Oh.
Not Pav.
No, what?
Not Pav.
2012.
Out-and-out striker.
Out-and-out striker. Oh,
Salah. Adebayor.
So we just got the midfielder.
Central midfielder left.
Wasn't he our top goal scorer in that season?
Adebayor.
He was fantastic for us when we got that.
About
that
17,
loan,
I think, that season. And when he got a contract, he wasn't. Wasn't
he didn't fancy it as much. Do you want a clue on the?
Genus.
Not Genus.
Okay. That was the end of his season, like the last season. Wasn't
Genus. But is an English midfielder,
Parker.
Not Scotty Parker.
But there must be one who has to play really centrally if Modric has been pushed out, right?
That's so this is the kit with the blue across the shoulder, isn't it?
I think so.
Oh, so it's Champions League era.
It was an academy graduate. This player,
Bentaleb.
No, good guess though. He left Spurs
Mason.
For and no, but he played for a club that Mason moved to.
Livermore. Jake Livermore.
Jake Livermore.
That's good. That's interesting.
This is a good question.
Yeah, that's good.
Courtesy of Simon Mitchell.
Do you know what I find really hard about that? The 80s, I could have done any season, and it's almost too soon. Do you know what I mean? I've not read about this. I remember this, and not as well as I thought.
Although I'm the complete opposite, where this was when I was going gaming, out, and
pull up the spreadsheet. You'd have been there.
Genuinely, I will have been at that game, and like all of those players, I love those players. This is when we were on the way up, sort of. Who was the manager? Yeah. AVB.
I think it was Harry.
Oh yeah, of course it was. He's Champions League.
Yeah.
Friedel and
I love how each of these players are sort of weirdly flawed. Friedel.
Yeah.
Friedel has got like. He can't move. Walker was really stupid back then. Gallas couldn't move. Cabal.
Bale shouldn't have been playing left back.
Exactly. Lennon can't cross. Sandro always injured.
We've got Modric stuck out on the wing to let Livermore play in the middle. You know, it's like the infield in
Van der Vaart,
but still
goal hanging. But was great. Like and then
great partnership
Addy.
Actually with he got the best out of both of them, didn't he?
But like you look at that team. Versus the team we've got now, and you just think, wow, we've done
it.
In 6, we'd beat that team 4-5-0.
This is what gets me. This is what gets me with the fan base. And I loathe to say it, but there are people out there who are becoming like
Arsenal.
The fans on AFTV, as they now call it, because they've been given a cease and desist notification by the club. But we're not those people. Please don't ever become that sense of entitlement. You know, you've still got to win. I watched Tottenham in the 80s when we were at times glorious, but still, you know, the thing I was once told as a kid was, oh, Tottenham, they could beat Real Madrid one week and lose to Huddersfield the next. And that's what we were like. We could. We'd never win the league because we would beat the good teams and then we'd draw with Coventry or we'd draw and lose to the weaker teams. The 90s, frankly, it was like constipation being a Tottenham fan. We go every week, but being at White Lane was like straining on the toilet.
Yeah.
These people don't deserve to behave like that. They don't deserve to demand things.
But then, I agree with you, right? But then, if a lot of our fan base came in that year, the 2012, right, when we came Champions League, I would love to see the dates of when bronze memberships happened.
Yeah.
And for most people, the history is that team because there's no players in that team who are playing for us anymore, you know? And all of them have gone on to some of them better, some of them worse things. So that is history to them. Like, if you have a kid who's 18 now, they were in primary school when that team was coming out. So actually, they they don't know much success because we still hadn't won a cup for 4 years at that point, and even then that wasn't a proper cup. So I don't know what they're entitled about. I've never got this idea of we need to win a trophy this year, we deserve to win a trophy this year. Have they forgotten about all the other teams who are trying to do that, who have more money, who have better players than us? I don't really get this entitlement, and I think the way the club has treated us now, because you know I'm fuming about that, is due to that entitlement. The club know that those people will come regardless, and that has come from the tourism fans or the tourist fans. You know, I've read about how we might be the most popular club in America, and is that a good thing? I don't know. There's a bit of me which will always want to be relegated, which will always want 2,000 people and just a really
non-league football.
Yeah. Non-league football, where it's only the passionate. But you can't have that now. We're not that club, and you have to take this around the edges. And football has changed. What we want doesn't exist anymore. I was getting quite emotional about this,
and I agree, because if we won the League Cup next season, this season, or last season, or the season before, no one's going to be happier than me. I'm going to be there at Wembley because I'm a season ticket holder. You might not in future because we'll have too many season ticket holders for finals.
Yeah,
but no one will be happier than me for that. But are the players going to stay because we've won the League Cup? You know?
No.
Actually, if we can go deep and have more glorious nights in the Champions League, or we can push and remain in the top four, and I don't mean for Champions League, I just mean being part of the top four, the Premier League of England, the most expensive league in the world, where we've not done it by spending stupid amounts of money. We've done it, again, I'll use the word organically, with Pochettino, where he's brought together this collective of players, some bought cheaply, some bought at some expense, but some homegrown players as well blended in there, fighting for each other. Yeah. And do you know what? If we could afford Neymar, it would ruin the dynamic at Tottenham, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
It would change everything. The dressing room would be toxic, it would be horrid. We wouldn't see the same.
He said stuff like that, didn't he, Poch? That it's not just about the quality of the player, it's the quality of the person that you're signing as well, which I love that. I love that it's more than just the player.
Did you watch the City game yesterday?
Yeah.
Did you hear anything? There was no crowd. It was remarkably quiet. And it was remarkably empty. Well, it's not remarkably empty, because it's always empty there. Success doesn't breed passion. And that's the thing we've got to realise. That, you know, I love my leadership stuff. And one of the things, I love my war leadership. And the reason why war leadership is so interesting is because everything is accentuated. Like, you see the worst of humanity, you see the best of humanity, but everyone's going through a really hard time, and I think people come together when things are difficult. And that's why White Hart Lane was good, because it was a sort of symbol of, we had a smaller, crapper ground than everyone else, but it was great because that brought everyone together.
It was our lane
and we survived with the club. Now, with that report where they don't need us to make money anymore, and now it just doesn't feel like they need us anymore. Yeah. And that's breeding this discontent where we know we're not part of the club, where success is beating Man United or drawing with them in Fergie time. Now it's winning, it's only winning stuff, and there's only one club who's winning the FA Cup this year, and everybody wants to win that. We're not those clubs.
Also, you've got the club do treat us like customers, but the fans are acting like customers now.
Yes, some of them.
By making demands. Well, how much will we have to spend to guarantee we're going to win the league? We can't do that. That's not viable. Manchester City needed wing-backs. They went out and spent 127 on three wing-backs at the beginning of the last season. One got injured almost straight away. They ended up, in fact, didn't Delph have to play left back for half the season?
Did a good job as well.
You know, there's no guarantee even for City that the money would guarantee it. Like, in time, it did. But, you know, a free transfer, or that type of player, an English midfielder who'll come back and do a job, ended up helping them win the league.
The money thing's an interesting one. I do love people on Twitter. We're dealing with millionaires, people at the very, very top of their game, giving advice to people who are billionaires on how to deal with money. I never really understood that. But it always comes back to wages. I know it's boring me going on about this, but it always comes back to wages. How much wages can you pay? There's a strong correlation between your league position and your average wage. We are about the fifth average wage payer. We deserve to be fifth. Anything more than that is overachievement. And we overachieve.
And we've overachieved with a collectiveness, haven't we, as a team?
That's it. That's exactly it. But, you know, I still enjoy the Tottenham Hotspur.
Sounds like it. Spurs on this day, 20th of August. So on this day in 1960, we opened the double season with a 2-0 home win over Everton, with goals from Les Allen and Bobby Smith.
We took maximum points from our first 11 games, a record for the top flight.
Decent, that's
it. Not a bad start.
No. Before we drew against Manchester City, and then we went on and won the next five, before we finally lost to Sheffield Wednesday in November of 1960.
There you go. Little Spurs on this day feature. It's
that's good.
Be
I like
part
that.
Of the pod this season. We've got Man United this weekend.
They were so bad yesterday.
They beat Leicester 2-0 on the opening day, and then lost 3-2 at Brighton, or 2-1, sorry, they beat Leicester, and then lost 3-2 at Brighton on Sunday. They were dreadful against Brighton.
It was 3-1, really. It was a 96th minute penalty, which they obviously it was a foul, but they didn't deserve a second goal.
Yeah, yeah.
They were dreadful. And Leicester, I'm really hoping they fall apart with Mahrez, and they've just signed Vardy to a 4-year contract, and he's there for a long time now, and he's old. He's like 32. So as soon as his speed goes, he's got nothing. I think it will be a bore draw.
That's good. We've lost 1-0 at Old Trafford the last two seasons running in tight games.
And
where
we've not played well, yeah. And Kane missed him. Didn't he? Did he miss the one two seasons ago? We lost him at the start of the season.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right. Vaguely,
Mourinho tends to just sort of kill the games whenever he's gone up there the last few years. And it's
worked. They can't
through.
Afford to lose to us type mentality.
Yeah. It's worked, but against us at Old Trafford, that tactic has worked for him the last couple of seasons. So I'm under no illusion that that is going to be an extremely difficult game, and we've not got a fantastic record there.
The thing with this Tottenham is if we play well, we've got a good chance of winning games.
Yeah, yeah.
We just need the forwards and the defenders to both play well in a game. And, you know,
that's it. His choice of back three versus back four versus diamonds is going to be massive in this.
Yes.
I think that's going to be really interesting. It's good to see Toby back. I know you've probably already covered this, but that will be really interesting.
Yeah. Just you look at Man United now, and it's a Mourinho team that is so far from a Mourinho team.
Mm.
Like, you just look at them and you think, we're going to get four or five gold chances in this game.
Yeah.
He's paid 30-odd million for Lindelof, who's playing centre-half.
And then he wants to spend 60 million on Maguire, which is twice as much as he might really be worth even in this market.
Yeah.
They just seem to want to throw money at any problem and never deal with
the
issues and coach people.
He's never been a second-term manager. He's always Porto, Chelsea the first time, Inter, Real Madrid, Chelsea, Man United. He's built one team and has never, ever been able to build a second team.
They've missed Matic massively, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Matic is such a big player for them, and him not being there is just...
That was interesting as well. Yeah, is the way how differently Pogba is treated for France. He was brilliant in the World Cup, and that's because he had a team of superstars around him who were pulling their weight. Whereas he's asked to be like both Sandro and Jermaine Jenas, and
which is an impossible task.
Yeah.
No one can do that.
But do you know what I mean? He's asked to do so. Like, there's the weight of the world is on his shoulders, and he can't deliver.
But in the World Cup, people said, "Oh, he hasn't got the discipline. Oh, you know, he's not having to play under the discipline." Regime of Mourinho. I thought he was played a really disciplined role for France.
Yes,
he knew his role and he stuck to it.
Yeah,
brilliantly.
Yeah,
I think he's a brilliant player, Pogba. I think in his position, like for like, he's one of the best in the world.
I'd have him at Spurs all day long.
I think if you put him in the Spurs team, that would be the kind of player that would put us on a par with City, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Someone like him is absolutely fantastic, but. I don't know. I don't really buy into the whole he's not disciplined, he can't play in a turn.
No.
I think that's a load of rubbish. I just think that him and Mourinho have some kind of problem, and it's so obvious to see on the field.
His ego.
You can see our players go out and they want to do their best for Poch, and if that is not the case under Mourinho, players seem scared of him, and you never know what the reaction is going to be. I'd hate for him to be our club's manager.
Oh,
really,
he'd be the worst. And I think Man United fans are realising that now. They didn't just want victory at all costs. I think,
but they would have taken it, and then they're not getting it.
Yeah, that's
it though. It's Mourinho football without the league titles, which
because he's always been able to throw that back at you and say, "Okay, I've won the league."
Yeah.
You know that Chelsea, we'll win one games 1-0. We don't care.
And their previous manager, what's his name? The Dutch fella, the weird looking
Van Gaal.
He left with an FA Cup on his lap. You know,
no disgrace in that.
Mm. Who? How many of them would get into our first team?
What from
United?
Keeper would get in.
Yeah.
De Gea, yeah.
I think Pogba would get in.
Yeah.
That's
it, right? That's crazy.
I mean, yeah, if you're playing a 4-2-3-1 or 4-1, you know, it's arguably... Well, Sanchez would probably get in the team, but...
I'm a massive Rashford fan, but I don't know if he would get in.
Can't
but I think
him.
He's a brilliant player.
I just... He just... I would never... If you had the one-on-one...
Matic, of course, would.
Matic.
Sorry, just celebrating about him.
Would you, it's the same with Lukaku. I wouldn't trust him to deliver one-on-one.
No, I'm not. I've
not when
really
you've
been,
got Kane.
I've
I mean, yeah,
really
if you're building a super squad, you take both. Of course you would. But
I'd have him at Spurs though. I would have him at Spurs.
Predictions that United game then? It's either going to be 1-0 or 4-1, Spurs, you know.
I think 1-0.
I think it'll be 1-0 as well, actually. I think it'll be a draw, which would be a good result for us. Yeah. Go to Old Trafford and take the draw like that, that would be fine.
Hey, you take 7 points in those first three games.
Yeah, exactly. I've got some listener questions that I'm just going to rattle towards you now. So, Stato, is Kieran Trippier the second coming of David Beckham?
Definitely the Burnley Beckham, I agree.
As you already stated early in the show. ASD, do you think that Sanchez will get a lot of league starts if Toby stays and stays fit this season?
If Toby stays and stays fit, yeah, I do. I think second half of the season, Toby will just drop off.
Really?
But I also can see us playing that three a lot. Mm. I'm happy with that because
it gives
us the freedom of the fullbacks going forward. That gets the best out of. I mean, Ben Davies, who I always would have said is the conservative one out of Rose and Davies, he's in the other side, other team's box all the time. He crossed when Lucas Moura should have scored.
Yeah.
You know, the first goal before he had scored.
Yeah, I think he's one of our most improved players in the Premier League era. Ben Davis.
Danny Rose as well.
Bale probably
flying
the most
flag
improved.
For the Welshies.
Come on, Swansea boy.
Stato, we've seen Toby start, but not Rose in the first two games. Do you feel that Rose is further out the door than Toby?
I think he's further behind Davies than, you know,
Toby is
for that role. I don't think it's. You know, it's particularly any problem with Rose. I just think Davies is at the moment the man in possession of the shirt, and we know how much he likes to rotate his fullbacks when the football becomes more regular. I mean, we must have a few weeks of you know, we don't play a Champions League game until after Liverpool, do we? And there's no League Cup until.
I mean, Rose has got his challenges off the field.
He's
well
our
documented.
Second choice left back, though.
Yeah, you got that.
What a great position we're in.
I think he'll get plenty of game time, especially if we play that back three, because physically on the wing backs, you can't play that many games without needing a rest off.
And I wish him well. I hope it goes well for him.
He's a different player as well. He's not the same as Davies. Davies is more aggressive, maybe more conservative.
Yeah, yeah.
All things considered.
Defensively, he's more aware of his defensive responsibilities, and Rose can be a bit gung-ho, a bit like Walker-esque, I can get back. Doesn't make the stupid fouls that Walker constantly made for us. But
ASD, should Trippier take all free kicks for the rest of the season?
No.
Yeah, for all clubs. He can score a few against us. But yeah, of course. Well, why not?
So I couldn't really remember that it was the first free kick we scored since the game we went to see, where Eriksen scored the two against Swansea. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which was great. Two exactly the same free kicks. But I mean, he's two for two, England and Spurs. But Eriksen's, I would have Eriksen crossing. Eriksen's a dead ball specialist, I think.
I just think it's good to have another option
of course
now.
It is, yeah.
Like, I'd still love to see Toby from 40 yards just come and level one. Because
Sandro, where did? Oh no, that was against United, but that wasn't a free kick.
I always believed Cabal was going to score from his own half. Probably with the first touch. But I genuinely, or Heddon. Actually, he's the only guy who could have done that.
Do you remember the Brazilian centre half Alex, who played for Chelsea? He used to hit the odd free kick, didn't he? Most would go out of stadium.
He scored loads like that in Turkey. I think he'd come from like Galatasaray or somewhere, Fenerbahce maybe.
Last list of questions to Stato.
You're not going to read their names out? That's what they listen for.
It's disingenuous.
Who will have a bigger season, Moura, Lamella, Rose or Winks?
I've got a top four straight
away. All four? I'd like to see all four of them really pretty. It's hard to say. I want Winks. I'd like it to be Winks.
Winks number one, then Lamella. Then who are the other two? Moura and Rose. Then Rose.
I really like the look of Lucas Moura this season,
but I don't want to not pick Danny Rose to have a great season.
No.
Let's just
because his standards are already high, a great season for him, over delivering by 25%.
You know, Winks had that injury, he was so close, he would have probably gone to the World Cup if he'd have been fit.
I love that boy, Harry Winks played.
Fantasy football update.
Yeah, didn't do it this year.
You're not in it at all. Head's gone completely.
I'm so angry
at modern football in Spurs. I haven't even got my membership this year. I thought, because I didn't take my season ticket because I haven't got any money, but I used to have my bronze on auto-renew. They didn't auto-renew it, so I've lost everything, all that history.
Points, of course.
So my points went when I got my season ticket.
That's
really mad, isn't it? Because you were like in the top 1%,
0.1% of bronze members, and then I got my season ticket, and then they wiped all those points. And then, as it's a rolling thing, I would have still been up there because of my season ticket.
Top of the fantasy football league.
Oh,
in a minute,
but they're a prick.
James Lamont. Hi, James.
Hi, James. You're
not lovely guy. I met James at Wembley last season.
I thought it was going to be Abbas, so it's all right.
No, he's not. I don't know where Abbas is, actually. I think he's towards the end.
Can I just tell you my utter frustration? As you know, I always pick my team. I always tell you I'm going to win it. And then I don't do a single thing with it all season. This year, I entered a competition of another league where you have to spend your whole budget, but the aim is to score the fewest number of points.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
So I came up with a genius idea of buying Kane, Salah, Alderweireld.
Sounds brilliant.
Keeping them all on the bench and De Gea.
Yeah.
No, there's some bloody automated thing where if your guy is injured or out, he transfers them in. And week one, Salah and Kane played. I was like, I've got 15 points and I don't know how till I clicked on it.
That's fantastic.
It's outrageous. Oh, and I've got Hugh Gill because he's gone on loan. I've bought sensibly. Yeah. It's hard to spend all the money
that's
as well.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, fantasy league vomits.
Abbas is in third, actually.
Is he?
In the league.
I love that point.
Winning out of the lot in our WhatsApp group. So I'm in 13th.
Can I briefly mention the World Cup predictions?
Yeah,
oh, please do. Yeah.
Now, I have an apology to make. I would have put the results out there on Twitter.
But you didn't win.
But no, not at all. That is not the reason. And I'm now bringing it up for one very good reason. I inputted all the information onto an Excel document at work, which then corrupted, and I now can't access it. I can't even see the teams. One chap emailed them to me. I think one was on Twitter because I could have got that back. So I'm going to give you the top three. The top three was Fee Brooks from Springville, Utah, Simon Mitchell, and myself.
The quiz master.
Oh, so we were the top three.
So it's convenient that you've got in the top three, but there's you've not got any of the records to.
Only three entrants. That's why.
Amazing. Well, well done, Fee. Anyway,
well done, Fee Brooks.
Bottom of the Fantasy Football League with his team Spurs and Rejects is Juande Ramos as well.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Times are hard for I'm
realistic.
Yeah. Ramsey, while we are here, he's on a free at the end of the season. Do you have him? No, I don't have him.
No.
Talk about Barcelona or Lazio once again. That's like two ends of a very different scale.
I mean, decent player, but he's hardly, what is he, 27, 28 now? So he's not a young
injury.
There are still a lot of players that we, I think, dismiss who would improve our team and squad, and I think he would. I don't think it will happen. I'm not saying that the Tottenham Arsenal thing is a thing necessarily.
From an area of Cardiff well known for breeding idiots, stupid. It's not even in Cardiff, outside of Cardiff, for breeding like stupid inbred people. So
isn't he best friends with Chris Gunter? It turns out to be a rabid gooner.
Yeah.
Like goes under, you know, used to go when he was a Tottenham player with like hoodie up and cap on to watch them on his nights
off.
That's
amazing.
Same with that Tour de France winner. He's a massive gooner, isn't he?
Yes.
What's his face? What's his name?
Geraint.
Geraint Thomas.
Yeah, so big weekend ahead with the United game.
Yeah.
If we can take 3 points there, that would be a real, real strong start to the season.
Chelsea are in a disgrace.
Arsenal in a relegation battle.
They're hilariously bad. Like
6-pointer. Arsenal
West
Ham.
They'll come good
in time, weekend.
But
do you reckon?
Yeah, they're just.
I think they're a shambles. Flamengo
is funny though, isn't he? I mean, he'll score 6 1 week against Huddersfield, maybe, but
they won't score for 60.
Yeah.
Incredible miss as well. Yeah. It's good to be back. It's good to have the pod.
No,
back.
I'm going to be back on more this season. I'm aiming to be on every week if I can.
I will try. Just have family, you know, constraints that.
See, I have a family and that's why I'm coming on now.
Yeah.
I've worked out.
And make sure you stay tuned for the full new outro as well at the end of this podcast. It's not the Heroes in White and Blue anymore. But remember, whatever happens, future's bright, future's lily white. Come on, you Spurs.
I always thought there was very, very many people interested in football, and I always thought that football was a very important game, but I never realised until today just how important it is.
Whether the Wonder Boys of White Hart Lane are or are not the team of the century can't possibly be more than a matter of opinion.
Well, they're the finest team in Great Britain and one of the best in the world.
We are about the glory of the game. We are about playing with style. We are Tottenham Hotspur. The curve of the ball, the billow of the net, the beating of the trap and the picking of the lock, the swiftness of thought, the lightness of touch. We are Ginola, Greaves, Klinsmann. We are the collective gasp the intake of breath, the flick, the trick, the 30-yard free kick. We are Hoddle, Mabbott and King. We are the lob, the chip, the dummy and the volley. We are the hat trick, the scissor kick. We are Bill Nick.
That is schoolboy's own stuff.
We are the outside of the boot, the inside of the net, and those seconds that last forever.
Van der Vaart to level it up. Raphael van der Vaart, 2-2. It's quite a game, isn't it always?
We are Jennings, Defoe and Perryman. Glory past, glory future. What was, what is, what's next? We are Blanchflower, Ardiles and Bale. We are about winning with a flourish. We are about winning with style. We are about the glory of the game. Daring to try, daring to risk, daring to dream. To dare is to do.